Alti, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria and Switzerland.
Today's Alti interview is about real asset investments and the impact on ESG goals. We have the great pleasure of discussing this with Nick Parsons from Thomas Lloyd Global Asset Management. Nick is the group head of research in ESG policy and responsible for the firm's investment strategy and ESG integration. As the chair of the ESG Stewardship Committee, he oversees the implementation of the core SFDR reporting requirements. In addition, he is responsible for the macroeconomic research. Before Thomas Lloyd, he was with National Australia Bank, Commerzbank, and Banque Paribas. Hello, Nick. What a pleasure to welcome you in our virtual studios. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Christian. It's a pleasure to be with you.
The interest rates are on holidays already for a very long time. What is the difference between financial assets and real assets? And would financial investors be well advised to look into real assets?
That's a really good question to kick off with. We define financial assets as those which are listed on public markets. It doesn't matter whether that's in Frankfurt or London or New York or anywhere else. Typically, financial assets for most investors comprise stocks and bonds, but of course, they could also be derivative instruments or financial futures contracts. Now, real assets, by contrast, are physical and tangible. They can be very diverse. You know, we can talk about power stations, roads, railways, airports, bridges, roads, tunnels. They could even be in telecommunications or data centers, or could be what's come to be known as social infrastructure, such as schools and universities, hospitals and healthcare, prisons or housing. So there's lots of different types of real assets. Now, we've all seen the very strong performance of financial assets since the depths of the COVID crisis in the first quarter of last year. You know, in Germany, the DAX rose 80%. In the United States, the S&P rose 90%. And in technology, the gains have been even greater. The NASDAQ rose 103%. It more than doubled in just 14 months. In bond markets, central banks around the world, the European Central Bank, the US Fed, and others, they've all slashed official interest rates to zero or even below. They've also been engaged in a massive program of quantitative easing to buy government bonds to put liquidity into financial markets. And in some cases, they've done so explicitly to help governments finance their debts. The net result of that is that today there are more than $13 trillion of government bonds which have got negative interest rates. In Germany, for example, 10-year bunds yield just minus 0.17%. Now, by any conventional valuation metrics, whether we look at, say, price-to-earnings ratio, price-to-book ratio, price-to-free cash flow, or any of these, listed equities globally are the most expensive they've ever been, more so even than the height of the dot-com boom in 2000. The only measure that doesn't flash a red warning signal is relative to bonds, but that's because the bond market is being artificially supported by the central banks. Now, we can see all around that prices are going up. This might not yet be seen in official measures of inflation, but we can all see lots of examples. Petrol prices are up 20% from this time last year. Commodity prices are up over 50%. The cost of shipping goods from China to the US has doubled since September. And there are many other examples that we could throw out there. Now, as these price increases are passed along the production and supply chain, it seems inevitable to us that official measures of inflation are going to rise. This will hurt bond markets, and in turn, it could leave global equities very exposed. Now, investors in bonds and fixed income face a very difficult future. Anyone buying any of that $13 trillion of negative yielding bonds and holding them to maturity is 100% guaranteed to lose money. In real terms, after adjusting for inflation, the losses are likely to be even greater. Now, we believe that European investors who traditionally invest in bonds are not sufficiently aware of these risks. They face a very difficult future of little or no income, as well as capital losses. And as for sustainable or green investments in equities, investors should also be aware that buying equities provides no new money for investment. It merely changes the ownership of a share certificate. It doesn't create a single job or provide a single euro of fresh investment. It doesn't build new infrastructure, and it doesn't create any renewable energy. It brings no new money for the company to invest. It's purely a paper transaction. We believe that it's time to look at alternatives, and it's time now to look at real assets.
Very enlightening, Nick. Can you please give us some examples about infrastructure projects or real assets Thomas Lloyd is currently working on?
Yeah, I'd be very happy to. First example, we financed and built the first utility solar plant in Southeast Asia on the island of Negros in the Philippines. And that was back in 2014. Since then, we've built other solar plants in the Philippines, and we've diversified our geographic coverage with utility scale solar plants in India as well. We've also diversified the technologies in our renewable energy portfolio. And we're especially proud of the three biomass power plants that we've built on Negros Island. Now, Negros is known as the sugar capital of the Philippines. Around 54% of the country's entire sugar production comes from this one island, and it used to employ about a quarter of its entire workforce. But in the 1980s, the Philippines sugar industry was badly hit by the imposition of US quotas, and exports tumbled over 40%. Farmers' income was slashed and employment really, really suffered. But as a result of our investments in biomass energy, sugarcane farmers are again thriving. Now, the reason for that is that Thomas Lloyd's biomass plants use for fuel the trash which is left over after the sugarcane has been harvested. This is gathered from the fields and turned into bales, which are then burned to fuel the huge turbines in our electricity plants. And really, there are five key benefits which come from using this sugarcane trash as fuel. First, we pay the farmers to take away the trash. This boosts their incomes directly. Second, we save them the cost of traditional trash disposal. Third, they don't burn it in the fields. And that can do huge environmental damage. You can see that wherever sugarcane is grown around the world, they set fire to it in the fields. We don't do that. It improves the quality of the soil, and it provides locally generated electricity, creating over 1,000 local jobs. Now, we find all those benefits together really, really exciting. It's a great example of what investing in real assets can make a real difference.
Impressive. It looks like that these projects will mainly take place in growth regions, so emerging markets mainly. Mm-hmm. What is the reason for that?
Well, you're absolutely right that we go for growth. And the growth is in Asia. In fact, over the last 20 years, Asia's been the driver of global economic growth. And according to the IMF, the 30 countries in emerging and developing Asia grew at an annual average rate of 7.6% over the whole of the 20-year period up until the COVID pandemic. But as well as rapid economic growth, Asia's also characterized by rapid demographic growth. The UN forecasts that Asia's population is going to increase around 650 million over the next 30 years. That's about eight Germanys. You know, and it's going to be, Asia will account for more than 50% of all the people on the planet. Now, economic growth plus population growth plus greater urbanization, this trend of people moving to the cities, equals greater demand for electricity and other infrastructure. So we've got a real demand story. We've then got another story, which is around carbon emissions. Now, at Thomas Lloyd, we've developed this concept, which we call the carbon cost of economic growth. Simply, what we do is we measure the CO2 emissions per unit of output for every country. In simple terms, we calculate how many tons of CO2 are produced for each $1 trillion of GDP. Let's take Germany as an example. Annual GDP is $3.9 trillion. It's the fourth biggest economy in the world. Now, to produce that GDP, Germany emits 702 million tons of CO2. The carbon cost of GDP is 177 million tons for every $1 trillion of GDP. And this calculation can be replicated for every country. And if we look at the 10 largest countries in Asia, every one of them has a carbon cost for $1 trillion of GDP greater than any major country in Western Europe. And 9 of them have a carbon cost at least double that of Germany, which is, of course, the largest nation in Europe. At the worst end of the scale, India has a carbon cost of 880 million tons of carbon per $1 trillion of GDP. And that compares with Germany's 177. So you can see that there is a lot of CO2 emissions in Asia. But of course, this shouldn't come as any surprise. The Asian economies are in that transformative stage of economic development. And it was that transformation which Europe went through in the 20th century. Think of the Rhine and Ruhr in Germany, or think of the fog in London in the 1950s. Think of all that pollution that we had when we went through that transformative growth phase. Well, we're no longer in the 20th century. We've got new technologies which help reduce and mitigate climate change. Now, it's partly because of where they are, but of course, the Asian countries with the biggest increase in demand for energy are also the ones that are best placed for a supply response, because of course, they've got enormous solar radiation and they've got enormous potential, as I just mentioned, in biomass. And we think that putting these things together, the economic growth, the population growth, and the new technology that's available to help deliver that renewable energy, it does mean that Asia is where we have to focus our attention if we want to shift the dial on emissions globally. This is an enormous opportunity for investors.
Really interesting. How can the impact of the investments be measured? Is there enough transparency provided for, let's say, European or German investors?
Well, at Thomas Lloyd, we've been an impact investor long before the term became fashionable. We're proud to be an impact investor, and we set out deliberately and intentionally to generate positive, measurable social and environmental impact alongside a market-driven financial return. We are professional investors. We're not a charity. This is not philanthropic donations. We think there's no trade-off between financial performance and positive impact, because now we've got lots of new reporting requirements and lots of new regulations, especially in the EU. We have the new SFDR regulations from the beginning of this year, and they align the interests of all the stakeholders. Now, we've elected to report under Article 9 of the SFDR, and our investment funds are therefore classified as dark green. That's the most stringent reporting of all. So the first point to make is that there is plenty of transparency, and we report to the very highest standards of EU regulations. But as well as that dark green Article 9 reporting, our investment funds also are awarded the Lux Flag environmental label. So the Thomas Lloyd SICAV fund, the Sustainable Infrastructure Income Fund, is listed in Luxembourg, and it meets the standards of the Lux Flag environmental label, which is some of the highest possible standards and rigorous assessment of all our strategy and decisions and actions. And we think that there's plenty of transparency and plenty of confidence that investors can have that their investments are meeting the very, very highest standards.
Now, very practical, please. What is your advice to institutional investors in the German-speaking area, let's say Germany, Austria, Switzerland, the DACH region?
Well, institutional investors are talking a lot about sustainability, about ESG, and about impact. They're strengthening their capabilities. They're spending a lot on marketing, that's for sure, marketing their green credentials to their existing and their potential new investor base. But whilst they do all their negative screening, excluding industries such as fossil fuels or arms production, and they do all their research on ESG scoring and incorporation, they're still not providing new money where it's most needed. And as I've already said, investors in the DACH region who want to make a real difference and want to be proud of it should be looking to invest in real assets to provide new money for new infrastructure and new renewable energy projects. They're stable and predictable long-term income streams, and they provide attractive returns to their investors. In that way, they too can realize sustainable value by committing fresh long-term capital.
Now, finally, the outlook. What do you expect for the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years in your business?
Well, the next 3 to 5 years we view with excitement because they're full of opportunity. In the Philippines alone, you know, the Department of Energy says it will need an additional 2,000 megawatts of electricity every year for the next 20 years. Now, to put that into concrete terms for your listeners, that's an additional 10 to 20 power plants every year. And then to continue with that Philippines theme, although we will consume over 600,000 tons of sugarcane trash every year, that's less than 15% of what the island of Negros currently produces. So there are lots of opportunities to build further biomass power plants and do even more to mitigate and slow the pace of climate change. Then, having introduced mechanized collection of sugarcane trash, we can look at how we can work with farmers to mechanize other aspects of their agribusiness, improving productivity and yield, as well as increasing farm income. We can then go beyond that and consider other geographies where there is the potential for proven technology to be deployed, with all the benefits that accrue then for farmers in terms of their income, in terms of improving the air quality, employment, and the production of local renewable energy. So there's lots of opportunities both in the Philippines and elsewhere in Asia. Those are the fastest growing countries in the world. It does, of course, need political support, and the countries where we're investing, we can really sense that political support, and it requires the mobilization of international capital. But we think investors can and will look beyond their traditional preferences for fixed income and for listed equities, and we believe that the time is right now to look at the alternatives, because these are exciting times to be investing in real assets.
That was Nick Parsons from Thomas Lloyd Global Asset Management. Thank you very much for the really interesting insights and the conversation.
LTE.com, the online portal for institutional investors in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. LTE.com.